Chapter 5. I don't know heroes. There's no Superman in my life. I stopped looking for that when I was a kid. It was better than being let down all the time. Almost 2 months ago, someone looked at me like I was a hero. He was Güero, my brother. And he's gone now. I scribbled the words in my English notebook after dinner and then slammed the book shut. I couldn't believe I was writing. Who was I kidding? I knew what I wrote wasn't what Mr. Mitchell wanted. And I'll be honest with you, I was too scared to keep going. Just those few sentences made my hand shake like it does when I drink too much soda. I couldn't go any further. It does my heart good to see you doing your homework, Martin, my mom said, coming up behind me while I was sitting at the table. She put her hand on my back like she did when I was little. For a second, I felt like I was 8 years old again. I didn't speak, but I didn't push her hand away. It's gonna be okay for us here, mijo, she said. I believe that. I couldn't talk because my words suddenly felt all knotted in my throat. The world seemed so twisted. I could have argued with my mother, but I didn't. I don't know why, but I just let her touch me, never mentioning our last conversation, which still hung in the air like an invisible shadow. The next day I cut school. I hadn't exactly planned to do it. I'd even prepared to show Mr. Mitchell my paragraph just to get him off my back. But when I got dressed and finally left our apartment, I just couldn't get myself to go to the school. The closer I got, the harder each step became. Finally, I just turned around, went home, grabbed a few dollars, and headed to the bus station. A few minutes later, I was sitting on a bus heading back to my old neighborhood. I figured once I got home, I'd find Frankie and we'd hang out, just like old times, I told myself. But that was a lie. I knew old times ended when we buried Güero. Truth is, I just needed to get away from the new apartment, the homework that made me shake, the teacher who got in my face, the pretty girl who challenged me. I had to get away from Bluford. After a 30-minute ride, the bus was so crowded, people had to stand in the aisle. Next to me, an elderly white woman carrying a bouquet of flowers struggled to steady herself. I smiled at her, and she turned away without a word, like she was scared of me. Her look made me feel so low, you know? In her eyes, I was guilty, and she didn't even know me. I couldn't take it. "Excuse me," I said to her. A bump shook the bus and she grabbed the edge of my seat. Her fingers looked like old tree roots that grow on the top of the ground, but she didn't acknowledge me. "Ma'am, excuse me," I said again. This time she turned around slowly. Again, her eyes were nervous. "Would you like to sit down?" I said. "You can have my seat." The woman hesitated. I knew it would be safer for her to sit, but I could see she felt the opposite. "Really, it's okay," I assured her. I needed her to believe me. To believe that I could do something good, not just scare her. "Why, yes, that would be nice," she said finally, watching me carefully. I got up and moved out of her way so she could sit. I am sure she was glad to have a busload of people around to watch over her. Outside, the passing streets began to look familiar. I was getting close to home. "Thank you," I heard the woman say in a scratchy voice. "You're welcome, ma'am," I said. I tried to act like it was no big deal. Up ahead, I saw the tall bell tower of our church, St. Ignatius. Güero's grave was just a few blocks away. I hadn't been there since the funeral. The woman's bundle of flowers rubbed against my arm, and I looked down at them. "They're for my husband," she said. "He died 3 years ago. I was going to visit him last week, but I wasn't up to it. Not always easy getting around when you get to be my age. You'll see," she said with a smile. "I'm sorry about your husband, ma'am," I said. I could feel that burning in my eyes again. I don't know why it happened on the bus like that. Maybe the flowers were giving me allergies or something. I don't know. I couldn't imagine living to be an old person. And I could not deal with the idea of being old without my little brother. I still can't. I just had to visit him. As soon as the bus neared the cemetery, I pulled the cord, signaling the driver to stop. When the door opened, I climbed down and saw the woman following me. She made her way down the steps slowly, but her face seemed so determined I didn't know whether I should help her. Still, I tried. "Thank you for being such a gentleman," she said politely. "You don't see that much anymore." "You're welcome," I said, looking at the sea of headstones stretching back from the road. "There's too many dead people," Güero once said when we walked by the cemetery years ago. The comment seemed so funny at the time that I laughed out loud then. Now it just hurts. "You don't have to walk me there, son. I can manage it myself," the lady said to me when she reached the street corner outside the gates. I think she still wasn't totally sure about me. "I'm here to see someone too, ma'am," I explained. "My little brother." The woman's face softened instantly, like inside some kind of switch had been flipped. Though I can stare down any dude on the street, I couldn't look this old lady in the eye. Not then.
"Oh no," she said, her voice fading off for a second. "No young person should have to go through such pain," she said, putting her shaky veined hand on my arm. A second later, she reached into her flower bundle and pulled out a red rose. "Here, take this," she insisted. "Give it to your brother." I took the flower, but I couldn't speak to thank her. Together we made our way into the cemetery. The old woman went one way, and I went the other. We were two people who could not have been more different. But that morning, I felt closer to the white-haired woman than anyone else I knew. Ain't that messed up? At Widow's headstone, I sat down on the ground and felt the warm earth under my legs. It was peaceful and quiet. "I miss you, little brother," I said out loud. I then told him what had happened since he died. I described the move and the new high school. I even mentioned Vicky, just so Bluford wouldn't sound too depressing. "Me and Frankie are still tight," I assured him, as if it would be important to Weddle. All Frankie ever really did was help me chase Weddle away. I swear, to this day I still hear the squeak of that bike and see Weddle's eyes. The one thing I could not say to Weddle was what Frankie and I were planning. It just didn't feel right imagining Weddle knowing about us shooting someone. Nearby, a young man and his girlfriend were doing the same thing as me, sitting in front of a headstone and talking out loud to someone buried in the ground, someone they loved who died. Don't think it's strange. If you haven't suffered through this, you're just lucky. You will lose someone one day. All of us do. When it's your turn, remember me and Weddle. I left the old woman's rose on the edge of Weddle's stone and headed over to Frankie's. It was about 11 a.m. when I got there. "What's up, Holmes?" he said as soon as he saw me. He was working on his Le Mans as usual. Some things didn't change. "How's Bluford? Not too good if you're here already," he said, laughing at his comment. "Bluford stinks, Frankie. I hate it." "Any cute girls there?" he said. "You gotta hook me up, bro." "One, but she's not your type," I said. "Too smart for you." Frankie laughed. I pretended it was like old times for a minute, but I knew it wasn't. The strange silence that filled the air like a cloud of smoke was proof that everything had changed. "So what's up? How'd you get here?" "I took a bus. Then I went to visit Weddle. My first time since, you know." Frankie lit a cigarette and said nothing. It's what he always did when something bothered him. I turned on the radio in his car just to cut down the silence. "We're gonna take them out, Martin. Me and Chago been asking around. I made him and Junie get guns. We're getting stronger every day, Holmes. Tonight, Chago's seen this girl Lisa who's got people everywhere. I bet money she knows something. Trust me, as soon as that car appears, we'll know it." I felt like I was hearing him from far away, like he was on a bad phone connection with me or something. "My mom thinks it was my fault." "What?" "She said if I hadn't been out on the street, Weddle wouldn't have been shot. And you know what, Frankie? She's right, man. No one was after Weddle. You know it too. He was just in the wrong place at the wrong time because of me," I said, stomping a beer can into the concrete. "You know what's worse, Frankie? He looked to me to help him. I could see it in his eyes, bro." "Shut up, Holmes," Frankie yelled. "You didn't pull that trigger. It's not like you knew what was happening. You can't be blaming yourself, because you never did nothing to deserve that," he said, taking a long drag from his cigarette and tossing the butt into the street. "I never said this to you, but I guess you'd figure it out because you're smart. But that bullet was probably meant for me, Holmes," Frankie said, looking at me more seriously than ever. "I'm the only one in our crew with a reputation. The rest of you are just little wannabes except for you, Martin. You might be something one day." I sat down on the curb. My head felt ready to explode. Frankie's word made too much sense. Whenever all of us went out, it seemed the whole world knew Frankie. It even got to the point where the rest of us were almost jealous of him. At parties, people would say his name as if he was a TV star or something. His knife wound, his mysterious past, his willingness to fight, and his car just added to his reputation. Compared to him, the rest of us were nobodies. But I never thought about the target of the bullet that killed Weddle. Like the newspaper, I just made the story simple. 8-year-old gunned down in gang-related shooting. From the beginning, my response was simple. Just go after the person that hurt my brother. Now, Frankie just made the picture more complicated. How long have you thought about all this, Frankie?
From the beginning. But it don't matter. You and me are family. Remember?
When someone takes out your brother, they're taking out my brother. So we're in this together, Holmes. Like I said, we'll get them as soon as I find them.
I'm serious when I tell you all this had my head spinning. I felt dizzy. I know Frankie thought his words were supposed to comfort me, but they didn't. Instead, I had that nagging feeling that you get when you know you're forgetting something important, but you don't know what it is.
You're still down with this, right, Holmes?
Frankie asked me, studying my face strangely. You're not getting soft or nothing.
No, I'm down, Frankie. Don't worry.
But as I said the words, I was thinking that Frankie should have told me people were after him. If he had, I would have found a way to keep Weddle away. Maybe I could have saved him.
Cool, Martin, Frankie said, getting in his car and starting the engine. Let's get out of here.
I spent the rest of the day with Frankie. After visiting two auto parts shops, we worked on his car, grabbed some burgers, and picked up the rest of the boys. We hung out in Chago's garage. Junie and Frankie shared a joint. It wasn't the first time. I even drank half a beer, trying to pretend that I was like the rest of the guys, hanging out, telling stories, chilling. But who was I kidding? The beer tasted nasty, like dog pee. The boys' jokes didn't seem as funny. All the smoke stunk up my clothes. And Frankie kept watching me. He knew I was different, but I doubt if he knew why. It was about 8 o'clock when Frankie drove me home. He made me direct him to Blueford just so he could see my school.
This ain't your world, Holmes, he said, studying the school, and then staring at me.
I nodded. He was right, but I wasn't sure what my world was. Not anymore.
Martin, if there's something you need to tell me, you should do it. It ain't good to keep things hidden from your brother, he said once we got to my mom's apartment. His words seemed false to me. If he had followed his own advice, maybe Weta would still be alive.
Don't worry, Frankie. When I have something to say, you'll know it.